This is Glass City Humanist, a show about humanism, humanist values, by a humanist. Here is your host, Douglas Berger.
In this episode, my guest is science teacher and communicator, Reggie Finlay. We discuss the importance of science and critical thinking, especially in this time of pandemic. Reggie also discusses his personal journey from angry atheist and host of the Infidel Guy show to a science educator reaching out and changing the lives of his students.
Glass City Humanist is an outreach project of the Secular Humanists of Western Lake Erie, building community through compassion and reason for a better tomorrow. If you live in the greater Toledo, Ohio area and are looking for a humanist community, then please check us out. You can reach our group at humanistswle.org or from a link on our website, glasscityhumanist.show.
With us today is Reggie Finlay. He is an Atlanta native. He was host of the Infidel Guy podcast from 1999 to 2012. He's currently a full-time biology instructor with Ultimate Medical Academy and a full-time visiting professor of biology with Valencia College and an adjunct professor of science, understanding, and literacy at Franklin University. He's also a private biology tutor for international students. In private and public schools, he has taught the nature of science, life science, critical thinking, biology, chemistry, astronomy, and marine science. In his free time, he enjoys watching anime, reading nonfiction, in particular science news, conducting research, hanging out with fellow freethinkers, and studying as many science topics as he can at Allison, Coursera, edX, and Khan Academy. And thank you for joining us today, Reggie.
Thank you so much for having me, Doug. Glad to be here.
Now, obviously, according to your biography, you teach biology.
That's right.
And you teach it to people of all different ages and social backgrounds.
That's correct. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to confirm. Yeah, that is exactly correct. Yeah, I've taught ages from 4 all the way to 99. So.
Do you need to use different techniques for different groups of people that you teach?
Oh, definitely. You have to go up and down a scale. You have to kind of meet people where they are. I try my best not to leave people because not everyone obviously has the same kind of background, but it really depends especially on the type of work that I'm doing. You know, what's the goal? What is the desired outcome? Am I doing outreach? Things like that. But yeah, for the most part, I try to evaluate every individual person I'm speaking with, whether it's in a debate or in a classroom. And I try to really meet people where they are because it's not about trying to impress anyone, right? It's all about trying to make sure that the information is being disseminated properly and is comprehensible. And so I'm all about science, literacy, and understanding. I'm trying my best not to confuse people. So,
and with the students that you work with, how good or how much science literacy do they have before they reach your class? Is it good or bad or indifferent?
Well, I would like to say, I guess I can word it this way. It is not where it should be pretty much across the board. I think many of my fellow educators would concede this at all levels, whether it's, you know, middle, high school, collegiate. We see the same kind of pattern where they're coming in with many preconceived notions, and it's getting worse due to this disinformation age. And they just come in with a lot of ideas that they're picking off the internet, and it doesn't quite meld with what I'm teaching them. And I get a lot of pushback. They think I'm either not telling the truth or lying to them, or they'll just avoid the conversation altogether because they feel uncomfortable because they trust other resources. So that's a constant challenge, and that's something that I am really fighting against right now. It's a disinformation war, and you know the public is right in the middle of it, but you know I'm in there too, trying my best to fix this damage.
Yeah, and I do know that people who teach science or try to communicate science, it's important to them to reach as many people as they can and to do it in a way that I guess doesn't make the person feel bad for not knowing it or maybe knowing something different. For you, that is important too. I'm assuming that you teach somebody a topic or a subject that maybe they don't understand or they have a different idea of it, but you want to do it in a way that doesn't make them feel stupid. Yes. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. Exactly. And it's really all about relationship building as an educator. You want to try your best to find out what commonalities do you have with that person? Again, especially when you're in a classroom model and you're dealing with difficult students or individuals without that background, you want to try to make some kind of connection with them. And I think some educators kind of miss that. However, I think over the years, we've received more and more training. And I think a lot of educators almost, I hope anyway, kind of instinctively know this, that you have to kind of, you have to meet them where they are, and you have to, I don't like to say, and many educators kind of frown on this, we want to say, we don't want the students to like us per se, but it helps a lot if they do. that's just the reality of it. If they don't like you, they shut down. And so in many respects, educators, we have to almost be like performers, you know, and we have to keep thinking of ways to get their attention. And I know that when I taught here at Apopka High School here, I'm in Orlando, Florida now, by the way, and I'm in Apopka, Florida, and I taught at Apopka High School, and the students there, you know, not of course, like typical teenagers, not really interested in the sciences too much. You might have a few, but I created something called the Organism of the Day, and I tried my best to think of the most interesting, cool species that I know that the average person just doesn't know. And I was able to use that in my classroom as a moderating tool. So it really helped modify and moderate their behavior. And they just could not wait for that. And if they were acting up, I said, I was going to do the Organism of the Day, guys. Oh, we got to do so, you know, and they policed each other. And they really liked me. I had students come up and say, you know, you kind of are like an uncle to me. And I really appreciate you and I respect you. And if I had students say, I'm going to go into the sciences now, you know, and that was really, really great to hear. So yeah, so them liking you and you having things that just really keep their interest. Because one thing, I'm actually writing a book now kind of based on what I've learned as a high school educator. And I'm writing a book based on my website, amazinglife.bio, because in it, what happened, it never fails. Students would always say, when we're learning biology, like most biology teachers know, one of the first things you really teach is the nature of science. That's the first thing you start talking about. And then you kind of get into the atoms and molecules and how they make up our universe. And students are just bored out of their minds, right? They're like, I thought we were going to talk about animals. So, so I'm writing a book in which I do feature those aspects of, you know, the microscopic universe and how that comes to be our reality and contributes to biological life. But I also then bring in really interesting and cool animals. And so that's a book I'm developing right now because I get that all the time.
Now, did I have this right? You were the creator and the host of the Infidel Guy show.
That's right. The Infidel Guy show. Yep. Started in 1999 and it ended in 2012 or so. And some of my former listeners and fans keep asking me to come back, but I don't know. And my current position now, I'm focused really much more on just science education. Really is critical thinking and the public understanding of science is the big focus. Because if you have that foundation of questioning critically, of reflecting on your own thoughts, then you will inevitably move towards getting away from unsupported dogmas. So I don't need to focus so much on religion as I did in my former life. I'm really just now focusing on helping to enlighten people using those skills most humans have, but they just need to be developed. And that is thinking critically.
Now, did the show reach a natural conclusion or was there some change in your life that caused you to end it?
There were a good question. There were a few factors that kind of, I think I was actually burned out. I have over 500 shows still at the infidelguy.com website. Mm-hmm. And they're all just sitting there. And I think I just got burned out. I got tired of hearing myself say the same kind of things. I had the same kind of guests, same kind of debates. And I think I was bored. And right around that same time is when the YouTube came about, or at least started to get rather big. And I was making some decent money through YouTube, actually. And they changed their payment model and it went always down. It went almost all the way down to like $0 just through YouTube. And I was so frustrated and upset with the whole thing. I just closed my channel and then I just faded away into, well, obscurity, I guess, with some of the younger people don't know who I am. But a lot of the some of the old heads who are there from the beginning, they know that the Infidel Guy show, as well as the AFL show, which was Eric's show or Jake's show. And there were a few other programs out there in the very beginning, most of which are not around anymore. But yeah, so I think those are the two factors. It's really just boredom and just the way I could see the internet kind of evolving. I wasn't at that stage yet where, you know, I was ready to do dedicated video content and things like that.
Yeah, that was about the time that I first dabbled in podcasting was 2009, 2010. And I do remember, I don't know if I actually watched any of your programs or not, but I knew I knew you were around. That's why I was kind of perked my interest when we were talking at the conference and you mentioned that in your information. I did want to note, though, on the show, the Infidel Guy Show's website, you note that the person in the recordings isn't who you are today.
Correct.
And you say that some of your views have changed. Do you have a particular example?
Yes, I am now a fundamentalist Christian. Just kidding. But
what?
But as I kind of mentioned earlier, it's like my focus went from just being in people's faces, so to speak. I mean, let me start from the beginning. When I first started the Infidel Guy show, I was really angry. I was very angry that I was duped, that I was fooled, that I was used, I was manipulated, and I was very upset that my own community, the Black community, turned their back on me because I no longer believed what they believed. You know, I was called a traitor. I was called all these things. But I did notice, but I was well accepted by people that have the same views that I did. That community accepted me. And in fact, I was able to grow a career out of that. So, but I think I was still a little angry. But I ended up learning a lot in that process, a lot about religion, the history of religion, why people believe what they believe. I eventually ended up earning my first degree was in human development, and I took full advantage of that to learn more about the human brain and how it works and why people act the way they do. And honestly, I think I became a little bit more sympathetic and a little more empathetic to how people believe what they believe. And I just started losing interest in battling people about their beliefs. It just became irrelevant. And especially as I became just more science-minded, as I began to learn more about the sciences, that just became my focus. So when I talk about the new me, so to speak, I'm just someone now who is just more interested in improving the world through reason, critical thinking, humanism plus, and more. Religion, keep your religion, just keep it out of my schools, keep it off my lawn, keep it out of politics, and we'll be just peachy. So that's pretty much how I am now. And honestly, I think I suffered from quite a bit of Dunning-Kruger effect when I first began. And I think I became more humble over the years. I realized that the more I learned, I began to discover that I really didn't know much of anything. And that gave me some time. And I'm glad I kind of ended the show around 2012. It gave me some time to reflect on my own limitations, what I need to learn, what skills I need to gain, and how can I better impact our global community. And I went back to school. And when I went back to school, I earned my master's in science communication and then another master's in biology. And I then began to feel like, oh, wow, I really don't know anything now. But anyway, but yeah, so that's, I forgot where I was going with that thought. But now here I am.
Okay. Yeah, it's just very interesting. I know that when I first got involved with humanism, I knew I was an atheist first. But I had other ideas about the world and human problems and how to solve them. And I just never found atheists to fulfill that, how to find those solutions.
Right.
Because mostly it just deals with the God question.
Exactly. That's all it does.
That's all it really does. And so then you need to take the next step. Right. Well, you don't believe in God. Now what? Now what do you do?
Exactly right.
And I could never find myself. I can't hate people. I feel for them. I have empathy, compassion. So that's why humanism is just perfect for me, a perfect worldview for me, is because I take that empathy and compassion and try to help people in my community no matter what, if they're believers or not. I know I've probably helped people like that.
Exactly.
And so, but when I first started, I was like you, I was kind of angry about it, you know, wanting to debate people right and left.
Right.
And it just got to the point where I got tired of it because I knew I wasn't going to change their minds. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not the only reason why I did it. You know, it's always they talk about the people on the sidelines that are watching it. So I think it's important. Exactly. There's an important place for shows like yours and so I kind of reject this idea that people that don't believe should be meek and mild and not challenge the believers. I think that's total BS.
Oh yeah, it has its place for sure.
Right. So, I mean, there's different types of people, but yeah, it wasn't for me. It just was not something, you know, it's like, why would I want to debate that Christian guy? He's going to just make the same ridiculous arguments and exactly. I'm going to tear him down, but nobody's going to believe me.
Right. Right.
You know, it's just like, I want to do that. So yeah, I think it's great. And part of humanism is, you know, you change your views when you are exposed to new information. So,
and I think that's exactly the definition I think of a, you know, critically thinking, open-minded person would do. And I love to combine those because one can be open-minded, but you don't have a critical filter. So I like to say, you know, critical thinking, open-minded person would do that. And that's something I try to instill in my students as well, is to be okay with being incorrect or not knowing something. That's how you learn.
Right.
And, you know, and don't beat yourself up about it. It can feel embarrassing, but you should look at it as in being empowering, because now you gain new knowledge and you can do something with that. And so, in fact, you know, so back to the debating thing, right? So on LinkedIn lately, I've been really debating quite a bit, even though I need to be working on my dissertation. But I've been, because there's a lot of scientific disinformation out there about a variety of different medical treatments. There are a lot of fake false studies out there and websites that just make claims that just aren't true. And they can have 300 studies claiming that a certain treatment works and it just does not. So anyway, so some people like to bake cookies, but you know, I like to debate people on LinkedIn. And back to your point about, and the reason why I'm doing that, because people ask me, why do you do that? Why are you debating people? I thought you were kind of done with that. I says, well, I'm really talking to the people watching. I'm talking to the people on the sidelines, people who don't have their minds made up. They don't really know. They want access to the right information. I'm talking to them. And in many respects, I'm just kind of using that individual that's attacking me as a conduit to allow me to get out that information that they need to get so that they can make more informed decisions.
Yeah, I tend to do that on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Is I will, somebody, a friend of mine, maybe they're conservative, I don't know, they'll make some wild claim and I'll find the resources and debunk it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they'll complain to me, why are you coming on my page and challenging me? And, yes. And I'm like, and I have to explain. I said, well, it's nothing personal. It's just you're wrong.
Exactly. You said something incorrect and needs to be addressed.
Yeah. And I said, you have other people that are reading your page and I don't want them to get the wrong idea either.
Exactly right. I mean, it's funny because I'm actually vegan, right? So I call myself, I am a humanist, but I like to say humanist plus. So I actually include, you know, other non-human animals when I think of, you know, caring about others and caring about and trying to make this world a better place for all sentient beings. But I get beat up quite a bit in some forums, especially, you know, vegan forums and when vegan memes come out. And if it's wrong, I say something. If it's just not true, I'm one of, and inevitably someone will come up and say, why don't you just go along with it? It's just go along with the feeling and the flow of what the main purpose is. Because even though I agree with you in spirit, you are just scientifically incorrect. And I just have to correct this meme. It's just not right. And so it's a challenge, but it has to be done, you know, whether, and some people can't do that, right? It's like you take one side and you're all in, and no matter what that side says, because you identify with that side, some people just keep going with it, even though they don't agree, but they feel forced to, because no, I'm identifying as this group. I guess I have to go along with this.
Yeah. And then I'll have people, you know, ask me later, why do you put yourself through this? And it's like, well, I got my start on Usenet back in the day.
Hmm.
And so I learned, that's how I refined my beliefs, is by being challenged by other people and having to argue. And a lot of people, they just don't want to do that anymore. It's you know, I host another podcast that I do for myself about politics. And it is so hard for me to get people to come on to talk about politics because they don't want to deal with it. And it's like, well, you have to, because that's one of the things about being a citizen in this country is you have to be involved in politics somehow. You know, you just
I was going to say, I noticed that you said you have beliefs and you're comfortable with that term. Some people aren't. If you claim to be an atheist, for instance, they just really cringe when you say, well, I have beliefs. They don't like that.
Well, I try to avoid most God talk, like spirit. I do not like the word spirit.
It's meaningless, really.
It's meaningless. And people will say, well, can't you admire beauty and awe? And I said, well, yeah, I can. I don't need religion to do that. So yeah, I do that.
And it's a spiritual experience in many respects. One could argue.
But I don't, you know, I just don't normally use that term. There's other terms for it.
And kind of where I was going with that is like, beliefs are perfectly fine. Like when someone says, you know, what do you believe? And that's what I like about humanism, because it gives you an opportunity to actually express what you believe. And one of the differences with science, scientific-based beliefs as well, with some people cringe on, like, how can science have beliefs? You can have beliefs in science. Now, you might have an informed belief, or you may have a perspective or belief, or you accept something based on the evidence. I try not to cringe away from beliefs when somebody says, well, you have beliefs too. And I guess this is just a debate point for some people listening. If someone ever accuses you of having beliefs, you should be proud of that and just say, yeah, I do, but my beliefs are based on the preponderance of the evidence. And even if they're not, you can at least justify it in some kind of way, whereas some other groups who can't, when they're beholden onto some dogma. And that's what I was going to mention as well. When I look at humanism, I look at humanism as being looking at humans before dogma. Whenever humans are unnecessarily injured in some way because of dogma, the dogma has to change. We have to go back and look at whatever it is, whether it's scientific, whether it's theological, political. When humans are unnecessarily harmed, something's wrong with the dogma. We have to go back and look at that and see what it is, if it's something that we're acting upon. I'm not talking about some axiomatic scientific principle, but just something we put in practice that can harm humans.
For more information about the topics in this episode, including links used, please visit the episode page at glasscityhumanist.show.
And we mentioned this, or you mentioned this towards the beginning here, that you're involved with amazinglife.bio. And what is that site, and what's the goal? What's your plan for what you want to do with it?
You know, that's a really good question. Amazinglife.bio is a product of my teaching my high school kids. And at first I just had a series of PowerPoints that I was using, and I had like 365 organisms on a PowerPoint, and I would just go through those, you know, throughout the year. And of course, I knew that we weren't really in school 365 days a year, but I just wanted to make sure I had enough material. And I realized I had too many. I needed to put them someplace that'd be easier to access. And so I created amazinglife.bio. And then that is where I just started putting all of my organisms. And now teachers access them and they present them to their students. And it's just really a way, again, to just get people really interested in animals or organisms. Where there's plants, fungi, protists, and more complex organisms, that's what that site is all about. And in the future, I was really looking at some homeschool organizations, thinking maybe they can take advantage of that. But I am creating a book, as I mentioned earlier, based on this site. So there's going to be a book that's going to go along with it. And I'm bringing on some other writers who are going to contribute to it. And I'm actually considering making a vodcast or video cast based on that as well. But I'm also heavily involved with healthandsciencefacts.com, which is one of my spinoff sites. I started writing about COVID-19 disinformation on amazinglife.bio. It didn't seem to really fit very well, so I created healthandsciencefacts.com. And then there, I started addressing a lot of the the myths. The most popular article right now is the Bill Gates is putting microchips in vaccines with almost 8,000 views right now. And I do get hate mail periodically saying I'm closed-minded and stupid and I'm a sheep. And, you know, when I start hearing radio signals, I'll know why. But yeah, so I'm heavily involved in a lot of things. And honestly, sometimes I don't even know where I'm going with it. All I know, I just want to do the best I can to just put the information out there and try to change the world one person at a time.
I look back during this whole pandemic, and I know it's still ongoing, and I imagine how much better we might have come through it if we relied on the science.
Oh yeah.
Rather than the politics and emotions.
Right. And there's a concerted effort, though, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, yeah, you're pretty much going where I'm going with it. There's right. There's an effort to pretty much destroy that.
Right.
You know, we've had the perfect examples here in Ohio where it's just they had some woman that claimed to be a doctor saying that she was magnetized or people were magnetized when they took the vaccine.
Right.
And things like that. So what I wanted to ask you is, how important is science to you? And do you think it is important to our world today?
Yep. Just kidding. but no. Well, let me back up. First of all, that woman with the magnetized spot where she got her shot, I actually have an article at healthandsciencefacts.com about that. And I mean, science is very important, of course, to me personally. I mean, it's more than just my profession. You know, some would argue, oh, well, you know, since you work in the sciences, you're going to defend science no matter what. I've been accused of being a religious follower of scientism, right?
For instance. Right. Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like no, not at all. I just believe in evidence. Give me the evidence so I can make the better decisions. Now, like, shouldn't you want that too? No matter what your background is, you should want the best evidence. And that's really my position. And I think it is important that that society has, and I'm going to try to answer this as objectively as possible. We see the impacts of what is occurring when society does not have at least a basic understanding of general scientific principles. If there was any a better argument that the National Academies of Science or the NSF or any of these other organizations that we need more science, what we're going through right now proves this absolutely, that the public's lack of understanding science is harming us. They have no defensive capabilities when they come across disinformation. They just absorb things based on ignorance, really. They don't, and of course, and fear and emotionalism. That's what's driving it. So the public definitely could benefit from a hell of a lot more science and critical thinking, not less. And I would argue, really, critical thinking would maybe even supersede science, but you still need that foundation to base that from. Otherwise, your critical thinking would just be limited with respect to evidence and knowledge. Critical thinking helps. It's not the end-all be-all.
Yeah, and you mentioned that about being accused of worshiping science and scientism. Right. And I always have to stress to friends of mine that scientists are human. They can make mistakes.
Yep.
They can get all this data and just muck it up.
Indeed.
And it's happened, or the data is there, or it's true, but the outcome of what you do next is something that we don't want to do.
Right. Or we misinterpret the results or things like that.
Right. Exactly. And the perfect example I use when I'm talking to people about humanism, because humanists made this mistake as well, is eugenics.
Mm.
You know, and it was questionable. It was based on shoddy research, but that they had gone to the extreme that they thought that if we just got rid of the feeble-minded, we'd have a better people, you know? And on the surface, that seems reasonable.
Yeah, it's hard to say, right, when I feel like a bad person.
Right. But like, I think
everybody has had a thought once in their life, if everybody just thought a little bit more like me, this would be a better place. Even the feeble-minded, quote unquote, have thought the same thing. So
right. And it was just – and so they had these wacky studies that they based this information on. And they just made a big science about it. People call it sometimes people call it like social Darwinism.
Uh-huh. Social Darwinism. Yeah.
Right. And unfortunately, that literature and that thinking then was adopted by Adolf Hitler and the Nazis to justify what they did.
Right. I mean, again, people take, even if the scientific principle is true, it doesn't mean that one needs to carry it out to the most evil extreme they can consider. And people don't think about things like that. I mean, we're headed towards a kind of perfect society already, if we can afford it. It just depends with, genetic engineering. Eventually, we will have the technology, whether or not access to it will be occurring, but eventually, we are going to get to the place where we will be able to just custom design our children's eye color. There may be laws passed to try to prevent this, but the technology is going to be so easy to obtain, it'd be difficult to stop. There would have to be a lot of laws in place. But we are getting to the point where we will be able to create humans that have genetic defenses, resistance against various diseases and things like that. And we have no idea the future, what's going to happen. But it does seem like, I think, by and by large, most humans kind of have this idea that we want to live long. We want to be healthy. And one way to do that is by eliminating disease and eliminating genetic diseases. Will that make us more similar? Maybe to some degree. But it wouldn't be wiping out a species. It's just evolving. No. You can just say it's just evolving us as humans.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, there's a difference between locking up a human being and forcing them to be sterilized and taking away their rights to live as a person and tweaking a genetic code before a gamete becomes a fetus.
Right, right.
That's two totally separate things.
Right. And of course, they think, only God should have that ability to do this. For some of the religious people, for some of the more secular people, they may be saying yes, but it's too random. Mm-hmm. The insertion point, there's some issues with inserting it properly. We still don't have it's not accurate enough. So we're going to always have to discard embryos that they don't want. And so there's all these kind of arguments, and issues, and they're all irrelevant and they all should be looked at and considered. I don't know about the religious argument, but it should be considered because that's what they are concerned about, But yeah, I mean, it's funny. I have this conversation with my students as part of our curriculum about genetic modification. And the biggest arguments they come up with is that it's against God or it's unsafe. So I love to say, well, eventually it's not going to be as unsafe. What if it's just as efficient or as accurate as treating a bacterial infection? Like 99.9% of the time it works. So it's considered safe at that point. Would you allow it? For those who say it's against God, I asked them, I said, well, the same thought was about antibiotics. Mm-hmm. There are some groups, religious groups still today, who would not take antibiotics because they think it's against God. Where do you draw the line?
And there's some that won't take certain vaccines because it was developed using fetal tissue.
Oh, right. Even though it was a tissue line 10, 20, 30 years ago. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But they don't know that. The disinformationists want you to think that, Pfizer is in the lab, right? And they don't even use fetal tissue. But anyway, but let's say the J&J or one of the other adenoviruses, they're actively using fetuses right now. And, that's not
how that works. No, because I think they just don't understand that actually there's actually a framework, an ethical framework that science has to follow. So if you find out that somebody's doing something they shouldn't be doing, there's ways of stopping them.
Right. But science, the history of the application of science in America has been very dismal for communities, for underprivileged communities. And that's something, the reason why vaccine skepticism and hesitancy is so large in the African-American community, for instance, is of course the Tuskegee I'd like to call it, well, it was an experiment. This Tuskegee experiment in which they pretty much just watched African-Americans with syphilis just degrade. I mean, they just watched their health deteriorate. And of course, in our community, many African-Americans think they actually gave us syphilis, but that's not what happened. They were actually just watching us. But regardless, that fear of government is one reason why vaccine hesitancy is... I'm surprised more African Americans got the vaccine, considering how this meme is going around and this fear. Mm-hmm. But I hear it all the time. I hear it every day from members of my community that, you can't trust the government. This is what they did in the past. How do we know they're not putting something in these vaccines? And it's a legitimate argument.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's something to keep aware of. And definitely I tell people that. I say, at least, even if you don't understand the science, at least keep an eye out on what's going on.
Exactly. And once again, that's why science is so important. So now, and I think what I use is when I'm educating people, I tend to give them a little bit of fact, but also use the Socratic method of argumentation. And that is really kind of helping lead individuals, as far as they're really leading themselves. You're just asking them questions to see if their thoughts are internally consistent, because that's what they need to see. And so I love asking, when they say, Bill Gates is doing this, or, the government is putting this in a vaccine, ask them how.
Yeah,
right. Where? At what point in the process does this occur?
Well, and I don't why? Know. And why?
Yeah. And why? And how is that going to benefit the capitalists? One thing, people always talk about, population control and all these things. I said, why would major organizations that benefit off people buying these products have something to do with their demise? I mean, let's really think about this. I think they don't want to kill as many people as you think, if any, because that would cut into their profits. Are you really sure you thought this all the way out? But getting people to just really think more, introspectively, reflectively, question their own thinking, that's what really helps. Not really poking people in the chest and telling them, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. Just keep asking them the basics that we've learned in elementary school, right? The who, what, when, where, why, and how. I think when we allow people to be the experts they think they are, and you just kind of ask them these basic questions through that process, they start realizing they don't know as much as they thought they did. And then that is when you can start offering more information. But if we beat people up too much, they're just going to shut down and we don't get anywhere as, science educators.
What I wanted to do as we kind of wrap up today, I'd like to hand the mic over to the guest. And if you have any final words that you'd like us to know or projects to plug, I know you've plugged a lot, but if you want to do it again, you can. And just go ahead and let us know what you think we need to know.
Well, I don't really have much out there, really. I am currently working on my dissertation on critical thinking in high school science teachers. If you're interested in maybe helping me with the study, I would appreciate, shoot me an email to reggiefinleysenior@yahoo.com. And that's REGGIEF as in Frank, FINLEYSR for senior @yahoo.com. And if you're interested in participating in my study, now, even if you're a recent past science teacher in high school, reach out to me as well. Again, we're just looking at critical thinking aptitudes and how that may translate over into pedagogy. So I would appreciate it. And visit my websites. Please add me on LinkedIn if you'd like to. Just look for Reginald Finley on LinkedIn. You'll see me. I'm the black guy in a lab coat with the bacteriophage on my shoulder. That's my mascot, Phagey. You'll see him. And that's really it. I think I plugged everything else, and it was a pleasure being on the program, and I hope that the listeners got something out of this. I know I had a good time.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the topics in this episode, please visit the episode page at glasscityhumanist.show. Glass City Humanist is an outreach of the Secular Humanists of Western Lake Erie. Sholi can be reached at humanistswle.org. Glass City Humanist is hosted, written, and produced by Douglas Berger, and he's solely responsible for the content. Our theme music is Glass City Jam, composed using the Amplify Studio. See you next time!